In our Bible study, talking about how to study the Bible, we started last week looking at this topic, making distinctions. And we talked about making distinctions between the three dispensations, the patriarchal, the mosaical, and the Christian. And when we read something in the Bible, understanding during which of those dispensations this account happens. Because God told people to do things during the patriarchal period that were different than what He told them during the mosaical period, which is different than He tells us today. Just like He told Noah to build an ark. Well, that was something specific that was done under the patriarchal period, and it doesn't apply to us at all as far as, you know, we're not under an obligation to go build an ark. And so there's lots of different distinctions between those dispensations. And then we talked about distinguishing between the covenants, and especially the law of Moses, the Mosaical covenant, and the law of Christ, being able to distinguish those. And we looked at several examples about, you know, the differences between those and who they were given to and how long they were to last and a number of things like that. So we had to distinguish between them. The next one I want to put up here is distinguish between the permanent and the temporary. Some things in the Bible, when they were given, were meant to be permanent until the end of time, whereas other things were meant to be temporary. And so when we look at those accounts in the Bible, we have to, look always at the context, you know, look at the principle behind it and see what there is that He wants us to do. For instance, worshiping God is something that's permanent. People have been told and have the need to worship God since Adam and Eve, and that has never changed. That is permanent. Let's go to John chapter 4. You'll recognize this very readily, but I think it's good that we read it. John chapter 4. And in verse 23 and 24, would someone read that? God has always been seeking people to worship Him. Now, how people worshiped during the patriarchal period were different, was different than how they God was worshiped in the Mosaical and different today. But the idea of worshiping God hasn't changed. That is a permanent part of life, just like God's always had a moral code. He's always had a moral code for people to live by, regardless of where they were and when they lived or whatever. That's something that's permanent. It's always been there. And then for us today, you know, when He gave the Great Commission that's recorded in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, that is to be until the end of time. I mean, we're not supposed to stop going into all the world and preaching the gospel. When He gave that, that was to last until the end of time. It's something that we were continuing to do, or they started to do then, and we're to continue to do it. So there's just a few of the things that were permanent. But there's also things that were temporary. Anyone want to give me what was something that was temporary, that was given something specific that was temporary?
Sacrifices.
Sacrifice, animal sacrifices, right? That's something that was temporary. And we know it was temporary because in the book of Hebrews, He says those were done away with by Christ's sacrifice. And there's no need for them anymore. So they had a purpose. God ordained them, commanded them, told them how to do those animal sacrifices, but they were temporary. And there were a lot of things that were temporary in the Old Testament. There was also some things in the New Testament that were temporary. Like miraculous gifts. Let's look at a couple of places that talk about that. First of all, let's go to Mark 16. Mark 16. The very last verse of Mark 16 says, "And they went out, referring to the apostles, and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them and confirming the word through the accompanying signs." Through the accompanying signs. Why did they have to have accompanying signs? Why did they have to have these miracles that he talked about in verse 18, like taking up serpents and not dying, and drinking poison and not dying, laying hands on sick people and recovering? Why were those necessary?
Confirm the authenticity of what they were
saying. That's what he says right here. Confirming what they said. All right? Confirming what they said. But why did that have to be confirmed? Why was it necessary that the word be confirmed?
They didn't have a written word
then. That's right. They didn't have it at all, did they? They didn't have it at all. Some letters went to some places, right? And that was it. So they wouldn't know without miraculous gifts. And the book of Corinthians mentions all of those, but and we'll go there in a minute. But without those, they wouldn't know God's revealed will. They wouldn't know how to worship, or they wouldn't know what was expected of them in the marketplace, or all these things. So they had to have that. So when we go to 1 Corinthians 13, all of chapter 13 talks about things that are permanent and things that are temporary. And that's something I think that a lot of people in the world miss, is that chapter is all about things that were going to be for a while and things that were forever. And in particular, he mentions in the first half of the chapter about love, right? And he describes love, its qualities, its attributes. And then in verse 8, he says, love never fails. In other words, love never stops. Love is permanent. And if you look at the very end, verse 13, "And now abide faith, hope, and love, these three, but the greatest of these is love." Love is permanent. Love is not going to stop. Now, there's not going to be faith in heaven. There's not going to be hope in heaven. Won't need it, because we're already going to have it. It's going to be there for us to see and experience. But love is greater than these because it is permanent even all the way through heaven. So this whole chapter is about the difference between things that are permanent and things that are temporary. Now, in between what I read, the second part of verse 8 says, "But whether there are prophecies, they will fail." Now, he said love never fails. But prophecies, they're going to stop. Tongues, they're going to stop. Knowledge is going to vanish away. He's talking about miraculous gifts. They're going to stop. They're going to vanish away. They're going to cease. Why? Well, he says, "For we know in part and we prophesy in part." Partially. Partial fulfillment. And when this was written sometime in the 60s A.D., there was still quite a bit of the New Testament to be written. It wasn't finished by any means. And so they had to have people, and he talks a lot about this in 1 Corinthians, that had to have these gifts. Some of them had the gift of knowledge. Some of them had the gift of healing. Some of them had the gift of tongues. And so there were a number of different ones, and they were all needed because the church, the gospel, the scriptures were being built up. They weren't finished. They needed something. I heard it described kind of like scaffolding. When you're building something, you ought to have the scaffolding. But when you've got it finished, you leave the scaffolding up? No, you tear it down because it doesn't have a purpose anymore. Well, the miraculous gifts had a very distinct purpose, but once that was built up and finished, there was no reason for it anymore. There was no reason to confirm the word anymore. And so he says, "For we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come," not talking about a person, he says, "that which is perfect has come, complete." The word that perfect is translated from is translated complete in a lot of places. "Then that which is in part will be done away." Why? Because there's no need for it anymore. It had a purpose. It's been used up. "When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. When I became a man, I put away childish things." It was time when all of this was completely revealed, when it was done and all of it was finished. Then, remember he talks about being perfect, complete, mature. Then there was no need for these immature things. He says, like a child. And then he says, to make it even plainer, "For now we see in a mirror dimly." Why? Well, like James says in James chapter 1, we're supposed to look into what? We're supposed to look into that perfect law of liberty. And what we see in it, we're supposed to do. Who does those things? So we're supposed to look into it. Well, these people couldn't look into it. It was like looking into a mirror that was only partial. If you had a mirror that's had pieces broken out of it and you looked into it, you couldn't see it completely. Parts were missing. And he says that's like it is when 1 Corinthians was written and those were written. It wasn't complete. So people couldn't look into the complete will of God because it wasn't complete. And so they had to have these gifts to fill in those gaps. But that's all they were needed for. They weren't needed for anything else. So he says, when it's complete, then we can see face to face. In other words, we can see clearly. "Now I know in part, but then I shall know just as I also am known." Again, he talks about the difference between being in part and being full or filled. Again, the difference between temporary and permanent. Between temporary and permanent. And I don't think he can make that clearer. This isn't the only place, of course, he talks about spiritual gifts, but it is certainly one that makes it clear that they were only a very temporary need. And they were a necessity, but only for a few years. They weren't necessary forever. So there's a case of something that was temporary that helped make something permanent, which is God's Word. So being able to distinguish between the permanent and temporary, or not being able to distinguish those, has led a lot of people into still believing in miraculous gifts, still believing in Holy Spirit baptism. There's another one we could have mentioned. And a number of other things as well that falls into that category. Those things were childish. That's what he says. When I was a child, when miraculous gifts were in the church. That's a childish stage of the church. And miraculous gifts caused problems, didn't they? In the church at Corinth, they caused all kinds of problems. Somebody that spoke in tongues wanted to be able to heal. Somebody that healed wanted to be able to have supernatural knowledge, and on back and forth. So there was a lot of jealousy and greed in between people. So that's a very important distinction. As is the next one, being able to distinguish between custom and principle. Custom and principle. It's another very important distinction. There were a lot of things in the Bible that were matters of custom. And all we have to do to understand that is to go to the world of the first century and see that they were just a matter of custom. It wasn't just something that Christians did, like foot washing. Why was foot washing practiced? Well, there's no need for it today because, first of all, we don't live in that type of climate where people wore open-toed shoes a lot, many, many months. And, of course, they had lots of dirt and dust and everything else. And so when you wore those hours and hours every day, it was a very good thing to wash feet. But it wasn't a custom that was in the church. It wasn't something brought into the church. It was something that was already going on in society, in culture. So it wasn't something new introduced into the church. But what was introduced was the idea of it showing humility. It's showing humility and the idea of being a servant, being humble. And so there was a point to it, but there was a principle behind it. And so that's what it did. Jesus did it. Remember when he was in the upper room? He washed the disciples' feet. But he wasn't introducing anything new. That was something that had been practiced for many, many years. But he said, you know, look at foot washing. Look at what it shows. There's a principle here, a spiritual principle behind it. And there's a lot of things that we can do today to show humility. But it doesn't have to be washing other people's feet. There's lots of other ways to show humility besides that one. What might be a way to show humility today? That anybody have any ideas? How could we show humility today in helping people that might be needing something? You know, people that when you wash somebody's feet, it was because they needed washing. Okay, cleaning someone's house. What was you
saying? About when Barbara fixes the plates at the fellowship.
Okay. All right. Instead of getting hers first, which is what I would do. Yeah. Okay, good point. All right. Yeah. So you're still showing humility. But you don't necessarily have to do it through washing your feet. And of course, nowadays, some religious groups actually have that as a religious ritual. And they completely miss the point of what Jesus was trying to teach. So there's something that was a custom. And, of course, the several places in the New Testament talk about greeting one another with a holy kiss. Well, that was common. Men would kiss men. You know, that would be a common greeting. But it was something that was in society. And so what the New Testament was doing was regulating it. It didn't just say greet one another with a kiss. Greet one another with a holy kiss, which would distinguish it from some of the people in the first century. So those were customs. And same way today, we have customs that the world does that we can make or we need to be and show holiness in. And that could be in all kinds of things. How we dress, you know, what we look like and how we act. I mean, there's all kinds of things you could do to show holiness that the world would take in a different way. So here was one. It was a common thing to do, greet one another with a kiss, but the Bible says make sure it's a holy one. So those are some custom things. Principle. Things that are everlasting. Well, I kind of already mentioned one. And that's dressing. I'll put it, dressing modestly. Dressing modestly. Now that's something that's age-lasting. People, God has wanted people to dress modestly since the beginning of time. So that's a principle, all right? Now, how we do that is different. In other words, we can dress modestly with what, you know, with slacks or with dresses or shirts, blouses, whatever. But you can apply that in lots of ways, but that's the principle. But that was not just a custom in the first century by any means. So that is a principle. And so when we look at the principle behind these things, we can see that it wasn't just for the first century. That's something he's always wanted us to do. All right, let's see. Oh, I think we have time to cover this last one. Actually, I don't think we do, but we'll try. That's distinguishing between things that are essential and things that are just incidental. And this has caused all kinds of problems in the Lord's church. Things that are essential and things that are incidental. And again, we could talk about lots of different examples, just a few of them. Things that are incidental. How many did I write down here? Okay. Place of one's baptism. And by that I mean, as long as there's enough water to immerse someone, that's all that's important. In other words, being baptized in a church building doesn't make you any holier or better off than being baptized in a creek or a dirty pond or a cow tank or anything else. Because when you look at the New Testament, there's no indication whatsoever that there were special places to be baptized. Some were baptized in rivers. A lot of people were baptized in pools of water. And so there's nothing that says where you're baptized is important. It does say, and what is essential is, that there's enough water to be buried. Because there's a principle behind immersion. Go to Romans chapter 6, it talks about the principle. There has to be enough water to be immersed because baptism is a burial. And you can't be buried with a few drops of water or having a little spoonful poured on you. That's not a burial. Burial means you're entombed. It's all around you everywhere. That's what a burial is. Where Christians assemble. In other words, what kind of place? Place of assembly. A lot of places have church buildings, a lot of places don't, especially new congregations. They might rent a hall, they might rent a big room at a hotel. I preached at a little place for a while and middle Kentucky, and I think it was a Holiday Inn, wasn't it? It's a Holiday Inn. There's, I don't know, a dozen people. And that's all they did. They rented this little conference room or whatever you want to call it. And that's where they met. And when you go to the New Testament, people met all kinds of places, right? They met down by the river. I mean, some of them met under a porch. Some, they just met everywhere. So the place of the assembly wasn't important. Wasn't important at all. The last one, the number of communion baskets and cups. How many did people use in the first century? Whatever they had. There's no indication whatsoever in any of the places that talk about the communion that there were X number of baskets for the unleavened bread or X number of cups. What was important, though, was what they partook of. The unleavened bread was very important. The fruit of the vine, very important. They had spiritual significance. But whether the baskets were made out of stoneware or metal or wood or straw didn't have any significance whatsoever. Nor whether that they had one or 15 didn't make any difference. Cups, what did they drink out of? Didn't make any difference if it was stoneware or wood or metal, fashioned metal cup. Didn't make any difference what it was made out of. Didn't make any difference how many they used, whether it was one or 10. But what went inside them was significant. So one was essential, the other was incidental. And you could continue on with a number of different instances. But being able to distinguish between those is a very important thing in the New Testament. And that's looks like our time is up. Next Wednesday, Lord willing, we're going to start talking about when we study the Bible, understanding the difference between things that are literal and figurative, figures of speech, poetry, all of that's very important in the New Testament as far as understanding what he wants of us.